Everybody was expecting 3 years ago that the sales of the plant-based meat will be at, I don't know, double digit or in the share of the market, but it's not the case due to the taste, as I said, and also due to the cost.
Hello, and welcome to the CVC Unplugged podcast from GCV. I'm Fernando Moncada. For years now, people, myself included, have been waiting for the advent, in earnest, of non-animal-based meat alternatives. Everyone loves a barbecue, but you know, not everyone loves the industry's effect on the environment, our health, or the treatment of the animals themselves. Alternatives have been coming to the shelf for years now, but the same problems persist. The taste is not quite the same as real meat, and the price is just far too high, really, to compete against actual meat. Today I speak to Giacomo Fanin, managing partner of Gray Silo Ventures, the corporate VC arm of family-owned Italian grain processing company Cereal Docs, which has a portfolio that heavily features startups working on alternate meat and protein. Fanin describes how the barriers that have been holding alternate meats back competitively not only persist, but have in fact been exacerbated by inflation despite the enthusiasm for them. He talks about the gap between the sophistication of the technology being developed and the capacity to actually scale its production, leading to lackluster sales in recent years that have undershot expectations, which in turn have quieted investment in the B2C alternate meat sector. He also talks about how founding the CVC arm will position Cereal Docs in the industry, and how he sees open innovation as a route to strengthen the company, the founding family of which he is a second-generation member, for years to come. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe to CVC Unplugged, and above all, enjoy the show. Giacomo, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. How's it going?
It's all good. Nice to see you, Fernando. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Are you in Milan at the minute?
Yes, I'm in Milan. So where we are located with our Gray Silo offices.
Yeah, and I think you can definitely tell which one of us is in Italy and which one of us is in the UK. You know, I'm here in this sweater, and you're looking, you know, very sharp with, you know, a black turtleneck and a jacket on. So definitely see which one of us has the better style, son.
You know, Milan is one of the capital of the fashion. So we, as Italians, and being Milan, we really like to be well-dressed. And let's say this is part of our culture in a way. And so at least most of us is a lot to be also well-dressed. But I think that also changed a lot in Italy too. Everybody is more relaxed also on that.
Well, I mean, if this is what relaxed looks like, then going out to dinner must be like, you know, going to the Oscars or Casino Royale or something. But thanks for joining. And let's start off the way we usually do. So tell me a bit about yourself and your background. So you've been at Cereal Docs for quite a while now, a company owned by your family. So it's near and dear to you, of course. And more recently, you set up its corporate VC unit, Gray Silo Ventures. You know, to tell me about your journey and where the idea for Gray Silo came from in the first place.
Sure. Thanks for your great question, Fernando. So I'm Giacomo and I'm 30 years old. I'm born in the northeast part of the country. So grew up in a small town close to Venice and now living in Milan. I have a very, let's say, standard background with a business degree. And then I immediately started the activity in the family company because I felt since when I was a child to have, let's say, the responsibility to join the company and to have my own impact on it. And one of the way that I'm trying to have my impact on that is really to prepare and to implement the proper tools into the company in order to pursue the corporate strategy. One of them is definitely the open innovation. So we started our activities around the Open Innovation Strategy back in 2018. And now we are in our, I think, the second chapter of this journey with the recent creation of Grayside Venture.
For the people at home, can you explain a bit more about Serial Docs itself and what you guys do?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Serial Docs is a 40 years old company based in the with the HQ located close to Venice, so in my own hometown. And what we do is to processing different type of agricultural raw materials, such as corn and oilseeds, into different type of ingredients that we then sell to the food manufacturer, pet food producer, and feed compound producer too. So it's really primary processing into the food supply chain, so at the very beginning of it. And we are doing this since 40 years. And today we are the largest company of this kind in Italy and one of the largest privately owned also player in Europe. So this is really an important role that we have in the food supply chain for the Italian and European markets.
Right. So you're right in the middle of the supply chain, right? So you don't harvest the grains yourself, and obviously you don't make the food on the other side, but you're right in the middle. You process all the grain in order to get it ready.
We are exactly a joining link between the farmers and the food manufacturer.
Right. And the company, you know, kind of moving into the topic of open innovation at Serial Docs. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the company's strategy has been going through somewhat of a shift, right? So whereas historically, maybe it's been obviously processing grain and food stuff in order to make food, now there's a real focus, you know, in response perhaps to consumer demand for real healthy food specifically.
Absolutely. So we are coming from as a commodity processor that process locally sourced and European sourced goods that we sell to the food companies, but we are going and focusing more and more to the valorization of natural ingredients, upcycled, cycling side streams, and so on. So what we call exactly from commodity to ingredients. So this is our strategy that we are perceiving in order to promote consumption of more benefit for the environment and also for the health, for the human health goods. So we are investing a lot on that through implementation of new technologies, but also with the collaboration and investment into new entrepreneurial companies. So the startups that we have in our portfolios and that we are looking to have in the future.
Yeah, and that's where the open innovation would come into it, right? So walk me through that a bit. When did that initiative begin, and then how did it transform into the creation of a corporate venture capital unit?
Yeah, I think that we made a call to my beginning of the journey when I said, okay, we really need as a second generation to bring our own impact into the company, and we really need to push the company in order to go in the direction that we want and to establish a better food system. And one of the tools is the open innovation for doing that. So we started in 2018, starting with a program in Milan, a corporate acceleration program. So it was a corporate accelerator for food tech startups. The name was a Food Tech Accelerator. And it was a bunch of food companies, a bunch of food Italian companies that put together their interest. And together with other stakeholders, we promote the creation of this hub. And we worked with several international food startups dealing with different type of technologies and business model that with the aim to bring more value to the food system and to improve it, to make it less environmentally impact. So that was the first aim. So we then started to work for 3 years around this program. And we worked with around 8 to 10 of startups per year during that program. So we started back in 2018, so already almost 6 years ago with our Open Innovation Strategy.
Nice. And then from there, what was the decision process to then say, okay, we have this innovation strategy already in place, but then how do we formalize it into like a formal structure and then start investing in startups?
Yeah, after I think those 3 years of doing a lot of stuff, training a lot, make several mistakes and so on, we definitely felt internally that was needed to make a major step ahead into the implementation of our Open Innovation Strategy. So we came out with the idea that was a good moment for Serial Docs to implement a corporate venture structure. So we presented to the board of directors in the September 2021, and the board approved the idea, and then we basically put the fundamentals structure for implement our corporate venture capital vehicle. And so we started then in the middle of 2022 with the creation of Gray Silo Venture, defining the investment thesis, defining the resources, the focus, and so on. So it was really, I think, just a step of on having more and more awareness of our capability, but also awareness of the needs that as a company we need to have in order to really go in a very efficient way and also with some level of efficacy into the open innovation activities. And we thought that having a corporate venture capital internally was the best idea.
What did you hope having the CVC unit would help accomplish insofar as positioning Serial Docs within the industry in Italy or in that supply chain?
Sure. Definitely having the corporate VC part of our structure is positioning us as one of the leaders in the agribusiness and food ingredients sector in the open innovation. Because also looking to our size, that maybe I didn't mention it, we are around 1.5 billion euro in sales per year. So we are, I think, in Italy, definitely one of the very rare example, if not the unique example, of a proper corporate VC in the food, of course, in the food industry, Italian food industries. And regarding Europe, definitely we are one of some that decided to go with this tool of the corporate VC. And definitely this is helping us also to promote the company as one of the leaders in Europe in the food industries as open innovation leader at the end in this category. And this is helping a lot the positioning of the company and also the status of the company. And I think that also we are now starting to see also concrete results regarding the business activities that are directly but also indirectly related to the activities of the corporate VC. Because having a tools like the corporate venture, it allows us to be in connection with many companies in different ways that then open new channels of other type of opportunities with different stakeholders.
How did you go about structuring your team?
Yeah, so from the very beginning, I said to the board of directors that it was needed to start with at least one full-time person. So, of course, so we started immediately the research for the right person. It wasn't so easy at the beginning because at the end you need somebody that have to be a balanced approach because we are not only focusing on the finance part but also more on the strategic part. Let's say with an industrial background of that you want to give to a corporate VC. So, and also acting specifically on the food tech. So likely we ended up finding Matteo, which have a balanced, if we can say in this way, background in food science, but also with a master in finance, and coming from the industry, from the VC industry. So he basically, immediately after meeting each other, he fell in love with our strategy, with our idea, and the purpose of Grey Silo Venture. And we put him on board, and now he's acting as an investment manager. And then we started to complement the team. And today, at this time, we have Matteo as investment manager, as I said, and then helping him on the scientific and technical due diligence to scientific advisors. And on the other side, helping him more on the deal flow generation, but also on the more business or let's say team due diligence. We have two venture partners. So we have, let's say, in this moment, a quite complete team of, at the end, one full-time person plus four part-time people. Myself, I'm spending 30% of my time acting as a managing partner at a Grey Silo, and being also and acting as, a connection point, connecting point for the corporate VC with the parent company. So this is also really, really important to really deploy all the added value that you can put on the ground as a corporate VC, being part of an industrial group like us.
Yeah, and do you find that challenging at all, having to split your time like that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, being part of the family and active act as a manager into the company is definitely all the time challenging. Luckily for me, as I said, as being from the very beginning, just matter of huge passion for the company, for doing the business in the company, to try to make it stronger and bigger. So really, to me, is not a problem, or it's not an hard issue to split my times. Of course, sometimes you have days that are very different regarding the meetings that you may have and discussion. But I think that is also a very add value, because you can really see what is going on the business side, but also at the same time decline it or vice versa, and doing that from the corporate VC to the business. So be part of the ownership and felt that we really need to have the impact on the company and the entire organization make me all the times really happy to do that.
Yeah, and you mentioned the kind of linking between Grey Silo and Serial Docs, and I want to come back to that and that kind of collaboration. But first, I wanted to ask you about your kind of focus areas themselves, right? So I think a lot of the work that's reflected in the portfolio for Grey Silo seems to be, you know, on alternate proteins and non-animal based proteins, right? Well, what we maybe once upon a time would have maybe called plant-based proteins, but there's a lot more nowadays than that. It's not animal and not plants, right? So we've got everything from fungi to other kind of microorganisms that are making, you know, that we can harness to get new protein sources. So when you look at the technologies that are coming online in this space, which of them kind of excite you the most?
Yeah. So to answer to your very first question, the focus is splitted with 60% into the food tech arena and 40% into the agri-tech ecosystem. When we came to the food tech, the focus is really on new type of ingredients, enabling technologies for the evolution of the food system. On the agri-tech side, instead, is enabling tools for the farmers to make their life and their working life easier and less impactful for the environment. So those are really the focus area. Regarding new exciting technologies, I think that there's a lot of going on regarding alternative fats, which is really a focus for us right now. But also right now, there is a lot of interest around alternative chocolates solution due to this huge increasing of price of cocoa, due to also some issues in the production due to climate change or other type of impacts. So those are in this moment focus that we are seeing, but also on the agritech part, all the new type of biostimulants, all the tools that are using the biology in order to implement and to improve the activities into the fields compared to the chemistry.
I want to ask you about alternate meats, right? It's an area that Gray Silo has a pretty heavy focus on with investments in portfolio companies like Juicy Marbles or Planetarians. And to a lesser extent, you know, a company like Mush Labs that looks at alternate proteins more generally. And I mentioned last time we spoke that I'm a pretty enthusiastic meat eater myself, but I am so a bit guiltily, right? Obviously, I'm aware of the impact that the industry has on the environment, et cetera. But I do look most of the time actively for some kind of alternative when I go to the supermarket and stuff. The problem that a lot of people have is kind of the same as it has been for several years, right? We've seen a bunch of alternatives come to the shelves, but the economics are just not there. And, you know, the price points are a bit too high to compete really with animal-based meats. So I wanted to ask you where we are today, really, in terms of bringing those prices down to a level where they might be, you know, adopted at a greater scale than they are now, right? Should we be optimistic or should we kind of temper our expectations in the short to medium term?
I think that when we go to plant-based meat, there was a huge excitement in the last 5 years or even more. What we are missing, I think, more than anything else is the taste. It's the taste. And in some cases also along the price, with the price. The fact that we are just coming out on a very big inflationary period. And I think these have had a huge impact into the plant-based sales. In order to at least calm down the excitement. I don't want to say they are not selling or they are not growing in sales, but they are not growing as expected. Everybody was expecting 3 years ago that the sales of the plant-based meat will be at, I don't know, double digit or in the share of the market, but is not the case due to the taste, as I said, and also due to the cost. So we see a lot of companies now trying to refocus, try to readjust their expectation. Unfortunately, many of them are going a bit, going through some hard times, and they really need to find the best solution for them. Also because at the same time, it basically disappeared the interest to B2C plant-based investments from the VCs, because you are plenty of solution and just a few are bringing really new innovation and a proper taste. So this is quite difficult right now, I think, for them. I think that in the short, medium term, it will still be quite tough. But in the medium, long term, I think few of them will emerge with a stable position into the market. Then, just to finalize the point, it's really difficult to me to say what will be really the position. What will be the market share of those type of products. Everybody was expecting huge market share in a very short period of time, few years ago. Today, nobody is predicting this anymore.
Right. And independent of the kind of inflationary pressures that might be hindering the sales relative to where we thought they would be, are there any structural kind of hurdles as well? So, obviously, it's one thing to have the technology, but then in order to really scale that, you need the manufacturing capacity, right? So you need changes in equipment, for the makers of these products. How much of an issue is that right now?
Regarding scaling up of the technology, you know, I think that also the situation of the inflation increased a lot the cost of CapEx. So if it was already quite difficult for some companies, because you have always the chicken and egg problem, no? You have the need to scale, but you are not yet have the proper volume for that scale. So what is lacking is the bridge in between, and many companies have found a lot of troubles with that. Of course, the ones that were able, you know, to have an appropriate balance between scaling up and growing the volumes, then they will achieve maybe the proper balance and reach a proper industrial scale, a proper scale. But definitely to implement a texturization line, a packaging line, a shelf stable or frozen line, it's quite hard, and at the end we are speaking about real things, making foods. It's something that may put you in front of different type of issues, which are quality assurance, quality control, operation efficiency, and so on. And some startups they weren't too much aware of the difficulties to really implement food production.
Right, because I suppose when you're creating a technology, you are trying to make, I don't know, maybe that first perfect piece of steak, right? But if you want to be a company, you have to make a lot of them.
Exactly.
And have them go everywhere. And that's where the kind of challenge lies.
Yeah.
Is there, from what you're hearing from the market, is there optimism about finding that bridge anytime soon?
I think that we need to work and to really find what could be an hybrid approach. So to not fall in love with too much fancy technologies, and also with, let's say, we can call it simple product. I think that the market is really looking to products that are not too much sophisticated, due also for the fact that or the price and the willingness of people to pay higher price on the food, which is not there in this moment. And also because it is easier to scale certain type of product than the more complicated ones. I think it will take time because will take also a lot of experience that have to be accumulated by the companies, the ones that will survive at the end in this period, because it's normal that somebody have to go out of the market, go out of business and doing something else. Is the risk that we have as an investor or that you have as an entrepreneur. So I think that the bridge, it's possible to be found. I think that it really depends also on the attitude of the founders and also on the help that the investor can give to them. We really, I think everybody, founders and investors have to be really pragmatic in the way they are approaching.
Yeah, and what does that pragmatism look like on the ground level? So let's say I'm a company like Juicy Marbles, you know, focused very much on kind of making this alternate source of fat, essentially to kind of, you know, marble through the non-animal based meat. I have the technology, it works quite well, but I need to scale it. How reliant am I on perhaps a corporate partner to help me do that and help me with the equipment?
I think in the implementation of the line, of the production line, there could be several mistakes that could be avoided thanks to the experience of already established food companies. I think that everybody have to not have the proper level of enthusiasm, so not to be too much, enthusiast of potential connection or interested by companies, because at the end, I think everybody as an investor and as founders, entrepreneur, we really need to focus on doing the things and make them happen, and then step by step, going through the different milestones that we may have, all of us, as investor and as founders.
Do you feel that there's more value today in having startups focused on the technology that you know that creates the actual product, or the technology enabling its scaling?
I think there is to fulfill that gap. I think there is the need of a lot of enabling technologies in this moment, because we have seen a lot of startups going for the product. I think we need some pragmatic and practical technologies that can really help the ecosystem to prove the ability to end up into the shelf with the right products. But I think that also there is the need of ingredients that can help the food manufacturer and the new food manufacturer to produce products that are tastier and healthier than what we most of the times found of into the shelf.
Earlier, you mentioned this 60-40% split between food tech and agritech in your portfolio, but some of your portfolio companies might fall into both buckets, right? I mean, I'm thinking of a company like MicroHarvest, for example, which uses microorganisms to produce, I think, protein for feed. So it is creating a food substance while at the same time taking pressure off the agricultural side of things, right? So what bucket would a company like that fall into?
Yeah, I think that this company is a good example that it falls in the feed tech angle, because they are focusing on producing feed ingredients, new type of feed ingredients. So really take out some pressure from the fields for producing, let's say, commodities that are going to the feed industries, and producing them in a different way, and providing to the aquaculture industry and also to the pet food manufacturer innovative proteins which are less related to the open fields growing activities. And this approach is really interesting, and we are really believing on it.
When you were kind of selecting the focus areas that Gray Silo would, you know, invest in, was that done with the view of, obviously, you want to bring strategic benefit to Cereal Docs? Would Cereal Docs be a supplier for some of the companies working on this kind of technology?
I think that our preferable way of collaborating is to really at some point implement and work together with them on the industrialization of their technologies in order to implement their product in our portfolio. That could be one way of collaboration with them. But also in this case, depend really on what the startups, the company is developing. If is it an ingredient company, it can work in this way. But for example, in other type of company, for example, with X-Farm, we are deploying their software with an app co-developed by us and them, and we are deploying it into our farmers network, which count more than 17,000 farmers in Italy. So the collaboration are really diversified, really depends on this type of startups. But when we came to the food tech startups, and if I need to recall our strategy from commodity to ingredients, is really the best achievement that we may achieve is to implement their product on our portfolio through a co-industrialization of their technology or process.
And you said you co-developed the app with X-Farms. How did that process happen?
Yeah, basically this is the important value of for me to be part in the company and part focusing on the corporate VC, because allow me to really have the leverage internally to the different departments that then they have to collaborate with the company. So in that case, we put together our agronomist department, our IT department, and also our digital department, digital solution department. And all together, they started to work on the best product possible that fit with our needs, starting from the huge capability of the X-Farm platform, and properly adjusted to the needs of our farmers, of our supply chain. And then we released the app that you can find on the application store, which is just for our own farmers, but which is Sistema Green Plus. And we are already released to more than 2,000 farmers, and they are daily using it. And what allowed us? It allowed us to collect the data in order to be more efficient on all the activities related to the traceability and the sustainability calculation that we have to do in order to, let's say, give to our customer the data about the impact and also the reduction of emission of their products.
Interesting. And was that a project that, you know, was that development of that app done after the investment was made, or was there an existing collaboration there that then the you know, Gray Silo invested in?
This is a very good question, Fernando. The collaboration started even before the constitution of Gray Silo, 1 year before. And so then the collaboration became more and more important, more or less at the same time of the constitution of the corporate DC. And having also at disposal the possibility to invest into new companies, I told to the founding teams of X-Farm that we were also ready to invest. And so for that reason, we invested in their Series B round they raised in August 2022.
Interesting. And Series B, that's a bit later than you usually kind of go in, right? Because you focus on seed and Series A, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. Exactly. It's exactly like that. And the reason is, I think, very well connected to what I just said, because it was a very special situation that we have this very important and strong relationship with X-Far. And so we decided to invest, even if it was a late stage investment, let's say, or a bit later than our sweet spot of investment. And then, but yes, our focus is mainly to invest on seed, from pre-seed to some kind of Series A or pre-Series A rounds.
Before we leave off, I wanted to ask, you know, for the benefit of any startup founders who are in the audience listening, first of all, you know, if they're in the food tech or agritech space and they want to reach out to you, what's the best way to get in touch? And then when they pitch you, what is it that you want to hear from them?
Yeah, so absolutely. You can find a lot of information about us on our website and also on our LinkedIn account, LinkedIn profile. We are quite active also on that. There is also an email address, which is contact@graysilovc.com, where you can apply for your startups with your pitch and so on. But also you can contact us on LinkedIn. So there are many ways to get in contact with us. We are very open and very available for everybody. I think that what we are really looking for is to entrepreneurs that have that understand really well what means to be an entrepreneur, which means that you need to be accountable, reliable, and driven by passion and humbleness. And I think that success and ambition, first of all, is very, very important, but everybody have to keep their foot most possible way on the ground, because it's just a matter of few things that the good things or the good stuff doesn't come anymore due to many reasons that you maybe also sometimes out of control. And let me add this, Fernando. I can say this because I'm coming from an entrepreneurial family. So one of our added value at Gray Silo is that we know really well what means be an entrepreneur every day. Of course, today our company have a lot of history, is well established and so on. But every day running a company makes you in front a lot of problems and issue regarding people management, operation activities, market issues, and so on. And I think that is really, really important to have the right humbleness on approaching the journey of building a new company. And that's what I learned from my father that started when it was 20 years old and started everything from scratch.
And from the original Gray Silo, which is where the CVC unit was named.
Yes,
after.
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly. From the original Gray Silo. And the idea was exactly to call Gray Silo Venture in order to recall to our heritage as an entrepreneurial family, since we want to invest to the new entrepreneurs that are out there.
Perfect. Well, on that note, Giacomo, thank you so much for joining me today. That was really interesting. And I think I learned a few things about the market there. Best of luck. You know, I look forward to hopefully seeing your portfolio products on the shelf not too long from now.
Thank you very much, Fernando. It was really a pleasure and honor to share my experience and our activities. And all the best to you too.
That's it for this week, folks. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. I have been Fernando Moncada. Our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from In Ear Production. Go check out his work today at inearproduction.com. We'll be back again next week, as ever. Until then, have a good one.